Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Tuesday, March the 1st. So we begin another month, and we begin another month with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're obviously going to talk about Ukraine and what is happening with Putin, what is happening with the military movements in Ukraine, some of the sanctions. And the other big story of the day, of course, is the President State of the Union. And I've never seen anything like this before, where the president walks into the Congress in such a weak political position. Today is also primary day in Texas. No big surprises coming out of Texas today, but the big one is what's going to happen in South Texas, where Republican turnout is really making a name for itself. So let me say hello to our good friend Bill Katz. Bill, it is absolutely lovely here in North Texas. What's it like in New York?
Well, let's see. Let me look out the window. In this last week, I haven't had too many chances to look out the window because of all that's going on. This is one of those weeks where you stay up and watch things in the middle of the night because of Ukraine. It's a cloudy day, but no precipitation.
All right. So it's not a bad day, in other words. You didn't see Al Gore walking around, did you, from your window?
No. Al hasn't been here recently. We do periodically get the Eveready and Duracell trucks coming through, supplying the department stores, but supermarkets for the next bad forecast.
Yes, well, we got to make sure that those guys are in business. I'm sure that they represent lots of jobs, and so we need jobs right now. So buy lots of batteries.
Lots of batteries, and you can store them. Don't even open the cases or the little packages because nothing's going to happen. Unless the forecast is for sunshine, then you know there'll be a snowstorm.
That's right. Well, it's beautiful here. We've had our own touch of winter here the last couple of weeks, but it is absolutely beautiful today. I think today it's in the 60s, actually 73 as I speak to you right now in mid-afternoon. Oh. So it's an absolutely lovely, just lovely, maybe a sign of spring coming up. We're going to talk a lot about Russia and the State of the Union, but I have a couple of quick stories here that I wanted to get to. This one, you just wrote this or the latest post over at Urgent Agenda, is the story about Harvard University and the students, and you call it Future Leaders of America. This is a great story, Bill. Tell us about it.
Well, this is a story that holds that the students at Harvard, which is one of the elite universities, I put the word elite in quotes because I'm not so sure that some of these schools really deserve that label any longer, but a supposedly elite university, very hard to get into, had decided that the presence of a police station on campus was traumatizing to them. It reminded them of oppression, of white supremacy. It reminded them that they are simply being looked at and stared at all day long. So the police station is being removed. And now, you have to ask the question, especially as we look at the heroism of young people in Ukraine who are facing death, and to compare it to stuff like that on American college campuses. I really worry about the future of this country. I'm hoping that these young people, once they get out of college, will see the corrective truth of society and will stop this stuff and this immaturity, because if they don't, we're going to be finished. And right. They should use as their role model the heroism they're seeing every day from young people, young girls, people holding families together while still in their teens. And I'm hopeful that lesson will be in some way learned.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think what we're seeing out of Ukraine from the people of Ukraine is absolutely incredible. And we'll talk about Ukraine in a minute, but I agree with you that the heroism that we're seeing out of Ukraine, I mean, I would love to see some of these snowflakes, I think that's what they call them, in our universities, take a look at that and see what real oppression is. I mean, if they really
yes.
want to talk about oppression, they should move to Ukraine for a couple of weeks and actually see it for themselves so that they can really see it. The other story, Bill, and you wrote about this as well, and that is CNN. Apparently CNN is going to change quite a bit over the next few months. There's a new leadership in town, and they're going to take CNN back to, they want more news and less opinion, Bill. I'm assuming that means they're going to have to make a bunch of personnel changes. I mean, I don't see Don Lemon just sitting there reading the news every night. So I'm assuming that his days are counted over at CNN, Bill.
I don't know whether his days are counted, but I was very encouraged by the few comments that we've had from the new leadership at CNN. The guy who's coming in is very experienced. He does not strike me as, you know, the height of intellect. He is not a true news person, but you don't have to be as long as you're thoughtful and reasonable and clear thinking. Basically, the message we're getting is that the former management went much too far to the left, allowed it to become the anti-Trump network. The result, of course, was a catastrophic decline in ratings. You know, you go on the air and you've lost half the country before you even start. And apparently the emphasis now will be to produce a good news broadcast. Now, I have to say, and I've written this at Urgent Agenda, I think we've seen some of the fruits of that already. Their reporting from Ukraine has been excellent. It really has been. It's been heroic.
Mm-hmm.
It's been
right.
Thoughtful. There may have been a few lapses here and there. But for the most part, I have no great complaint. I would have liked to have seen more real history, which I guess that's a pipe dream today with any journalistic organization. But I did not see any attempt to work into conversations that it was really Trump's fault or
right.
really this Republican right. senator's fault, which is what the old CNN would do. And I just hope it continues and that it continues past this crisis into some daily good news reporting.
Right.
It may be too much to ask. It's going to take a while. You can't make these decisions or judgments, rather, in a week. But I'd say after the first 6 months, we should know, and we are entering a very critical and very, very combative election season. So let's see how they report it.
Yeah, one of the things that CNN, one of the advantages, I should say, that CNN has is that because of their good reporting years ago, like back during the first Gulf War, I thought they were excellent back then. And in
yes.
fact, that's what I was watching back then. That's why I got news about the Gulf War. I went to CNN because they were great. They were very good, and they had people there on the ground. If you remember the night of the first attack, that one of their reporters was broadcasting from the hotel there in Baghdad. So they were very good in their coverage, and I'm kind of hoping that maybe that CNN can come back and report like that about Ukraine, because that would be a credit to them, but it'd be good for us, Bill. We need to know, we need to have good international news. And I'm not saying that we don't get it from Fox News. They have good people too. But I think CNN, in that respect, has more people outside of the United States to do this kind of broadcasting, Bill. At least that's my impression, Bill.
Well, I think it's probably a good impression. You know, I was in journalism, as you know, at one time at the New York Times, and it was very well known that the hardest thing to sell to readers was foreign news. It usually, unless war broke out, it usually ranked last. And the great editor I worked for at the New York Times, Lester Markell, said, "People must understand that what happens in Southeast Asia can result in the drafting of a boy in Des Moines." And we haven't had that attitude in journalism for some time. on some of the major networks, some of the major newspapers. I think it may come back now after Ukraine to realize how important foreign news really is. And, you know, the World War II generation is essentially gone. They understood it because of their bitter experience. But now I'm hoping that young people will understand that you have to follow foreign news. You have to follow it accurately to realize there are bad countries and bad people in the world. They may not be all bad in a particular country, but there are bad ideas out there and bad intentions, and that they may result in something that will occur in your home not too long from now. So right. Let's see if lessons are learned.
Well, you kind of get the feeling, it's not exactly identical, but you kind of get the feeling that many people today are having maybe the same reaction to Europe that they did back in 1939, which is to say, wow, this could get very messy. And of course, in 39 it did. And I hope it doesn't get messy like that now. But when you have a Putin talking about putting his nuclear forces on alert, that elevates this to a level that we have not seen, Bill, I think since the Cuban Missile Crisis, Bill.
That's true. I remember the Cuban Missile Crisis quite well, and I was in Washington during that period. The Cuban Missile Crisis was something that Americans took seriously, because if you look at when it occurred in 1962, that was only 17 years after the end of World War II, and it was only 9 years after the end of the Korean War. So we had many millions of veterans who understood how serious it was. And yes, Americans were on edge. We were baffled that the Russians would try to put missiles in Cuba. We understood why it was a danger to the United States. And I think President Kennedy handled it and handled public opinion very well. And the crisis ended well for us. The missiles were removed. There was never an attempt, to the best of our knowledge, to put them back again in Cuba by the Soviet Union. The one negative aspect of it is that it told Khrushchev that he needed an ocean-going navy, and it was after that that the Soviet Union, which already had an impressive submarine fleet, began to build more of a modern surface fleet. So they learned from it. I think we learned from it that we must always be on guard and must always be in a position where the enemy fears us. That is right. The greatest guarantee of peace.
That's exactly right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Russia and Ukraine, Bill. You have a situation now where you're getting a lot of mixed reports, and I think we can safely say, though, I think I can be safe in saying that the invasion is not going the way that Putin thought it was going to go. In other words, I think Putin thought that this would be over, if not over, that he would at least have more control of the country than he does. I think he underestimated two things. I'd like to have your reaction to what I'm saying now, but I think he underestimated two things, and that is the efficiency of his military, and number two is the bravery that you were mentioning a few minutes ago of the Ukraine people. I mean, my goodness, I see the president of Ukraine standing there and saying, I don't need a rope, I need weapons, you know. And you see even the first lady of Ukraine standing up there, and you see this Miss Ukraine, this young woman with a rifle.
Yes.
I mean, you see these people and you go, my goodness, you know, it is just absolutely amazing. You know, we didn't, you know, honestly, I didn't know we had people like that in the West anymore, Bill. But then again, we're not really talking about the West, we're talking about Ukraine. And maybe political correctness has not intoxicated that country as much as it has our universities, Bill.
I think you're right. Look at the universities. I haven't heard a word, from anybody in any university. I mean, you would think that people would be out demonstrating on behalf of Ukraine, at least the Ukrainian people. You don't have to like the government, but I don't see anything. So I think we have a way to go in the universities. But I think Americans, according to public opinion polls at least, have reacted rather well. Most Americans actually feel our government has not been tough enough, and I think they're right. I think we've been lax. I think we've been lax as much in our attitude as anything else. And I think also that one thing that the Americans must know, and here's where I will fault the news operations, is the degree to which former President Obama is responsible for what is happening today. That does not mean he favored an invasion of Ukraine. No one is accusing him of that. But he was exceptionally lax about Russia during his administration. He instructed his administration to follow his views. You may remember the picture of Secretary of State Hillary Clinton with a reset button, which she handed to the foreign minister of Russia, Mr. Lavrov,
right,
who's still in that job, and saying that we're going to reset relations with Russia.
That's
we're
right.
going to be good boys. Well, that attitude resulted in one catastrophe after another. Let us not forget that at the beginning of the Obama administration, there were no Russian troops in the Middle East. They had been kept out of the Middle East for years. It was he who, by inaction, allowed them back in, and we now have Russian bases in Syria, which are right on the border of Israel. We have an Iran that is empowered in part because of the presence of the Russians in the Middle East. They are pro-Russian. And we have a situation in Europe which the Obama administration helped cause. So, you know, you have, again, the Biden administration, led by a man who has had a very poor record in making judgments about foreign policy. And we are in the midst of a negotiation with Iran again to get us back to the nuclear Iran treaty. But every bit of leaked information we hear is that this will be another bad agreement, as was the 2015 agreement negotiated by the same team. So maybe this was, in part, a wake-up call. Biden's instincts are pro-American instincts, even though he has made a number of bad judgments as a United States senator about what we should do. But he's at least pro-American. There is not in him a whiff of this kind of internationalist that we're all equal and we've made mistakes too, and not everybody, you know, the kind of thing you hear from the left wing of the Democratic Party. So, but at the same time, we have to watch everything that he does. We have to watch that he will not sell out the Ukrainians and will do everything to help them, even though it may involve some risk. There is no good foreign policy without risk. You risk just by being involved in foreign policy. So far, I would give him a kind of a 50-50 score. He was very late getting to the game of arming the Ukrainians, which they clearly needed. He did warn us, this is to his credit, he and his administration did use classified information correctly, which was to warn us of what was going to happen, and they have been right. They've been right on all the things that they predicted in the last month. I would fault him on not making it a bipartisan issue. He should have gone to the Republicans in the Senate and say, we have to come together on this. And that is exactly what Franklin Roosevelt did, and it worked out very well. So we'll watch him. We'll watch his team. I have to give some credit to the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, who has spoken eloquently about what we face and what the stakes are, and he is to be commended. You know, at Urgent Agenda, We give credit where it's due. We are relatively conservative, but if a liberal does something wise and good, we'll always say it. And so far, so good, up to a point. The Ukrainians should have been better equipped and better trained, and that was a failure of ours. I think they're trying to make up for it. We'll see a lot of speech tonight about how far he goes.
That's right. That's correct. One thing, you know, going back back to the past, as they say, I'm sure we all remember that great debate between Mitt Romney and then-President Obama, where Mitt Romney pretty much called out Russia as a geopolitical threat. And they made fun of Mitt Romney like crazy. They said, oh, gosh, there goes, you know, we're back in the 80s again type of thing. And Mitt Romney turned out to be 100% correct on this, Bill.
Oh, yes, yes. Yes, what he had said at that time during that debate with Barack Obama, that he felt Russia would be the greatest challenge. And the Obama people jumped on him, and the line they used was, the 1980s are calling, and they want their foreign policy back. But it turned out that Romney was correct.
And there's also that other scene, you may remember, Bill, that conversation that President Obama had with whoever the president of Russia were at the time, where he said, I will have more time to work with you or in the second term, almost like, you know, creating this expectation that he was going to give up something. And, you know, what's interesting to me, Bill, is that the media never really went after Obama about that. I mean, the media pretty much let him get away with that. And that was potentially such an irresponsible thing that President Obama was saying. You know, wait until my second term and I'll have more room to work with you. Exactly what does that mean?
Exactly. More to give you, in effect. Well, he was flashing weakness when he shouldn't have been flashing weakness. Weakness leads to war. It tells your enemy they can attack without fear of being challenged. And that's exactly what he was doing. And he did it throughout his administration. It was the statement he made should have gotten him thrown out of office. And I think in many other countries that use the parliamentary system, he would have lost a vote of confidence. But we have, and it always must be said and said gently, but there is in this country a racial issue. And I think he was given a pass because he was our first black president. I think it was well-meaning, but I think the pass was carried too far.
Right. And in this case, I remember that I think this happened right before the campaign. So it should have been a huge campaign issue. It should have been a part of the debates. And to my knowledge, it wasn't. It was not really part of the debates at all. So I think this is huge oversight. Now, the sanctions, you know, you have Republicans like Senator Cotton from Arkansas saying that there should have been more sanctions. They should have been imposed months ago. How do you feel about that? Do you feel that these sanctions should have been in place months ago, Bill?
I think that some sanctions should have been in place. Senator Cotton is one of my favorite senators. He's an extraordinarily bright, well-informed man. I met him before he actually entered the military during the war on terror. A man who gave up a lucrative law career to first serve in the military and then engage in public service. I don't know any case where he's been wrong. He understands history. Had we imposed sanctions, we might have been able to avoid what has happened. However, the point has been made that we imposed sanctions on Japan, and they still attacked Pearl Harbor. And some people say, that the sanctions actually encouraged them to strike because they felt that they could not get anything from the United States.
Mm-hmm.
There's an argument to be made. But I do think that had we been tougher in some way, it is possible that Putin might have held back. However, we have to consider the argument that is being made that people who knew Vladimir Putin back then and knew how tough he was are saying, this is not the same man we knew. You've heard this from Condi Rice, from others, that he seems detached, that he seems unrealistic, removed from reality. Some of the same things, by the way, were said about Adolf Hitler as World War II progressed. You know, where are my divisions? Well, he didn't have any. You know, the dictators tend to be isolated because their flunkies, so to speak, tell them exactly what they want to hear. I cannot believe that Hitler was not warned by his generals about how difficult it would be to invade Russia. Well, he invaded Russia, and he paid a terrible price for it. But it is possible that Putin, who has been very successful at staying in power, has become full of himself, a man who believes he can do no wrong, and a man who believes his judgment is always right, and maybe he wasn't being challenged by the people he hired to give him correct information. So we don't know. You know, there's something I wrote at the beginning of this conflict, quoting William Goldman about doing things in Hollywood. And the line that he used, which became quite famous, was, nobody knows anything. And he was saying, you know, people just make their best judgment, but nobody actually knows anything. And there's no person you can depend on for perfect judgment. I think we may be in one of those situations.
Yeah. Well, I think another theory that I have, that the reason why these people like Putin become so detached from reality is that they're afraid of being killed or taken out. So they're basically surrounded by people who tell them what they want to hear. And, you know, that's another possibility here. That clearly was the case with Hitler. Had he listened to his generals, the 1940s maybe would have turned out a little bit different. But would you agree with me that the invasion, or you, I mean, would you agree or disagree with me that the invasion is not going the way it was planned, that, that, you know, they thought their army would move a lot faster? We're hearing all kinds of reports about the Russian army running out of gas and running out of provisions, which is pretty incredible to
yes.
me. But I'm so. Do you buy that? Do you think that that's true, or do you think that's just a lot of you know, Ukraine propaganda the other way, Bill?
I don't know. You know, nobody knows anything. It is inconceivable to me that the Red Army, which after all is a fearsome army, or at least was a fearsome army, would run out of gasoline. I also think that their intelligence on Ukraine, which they consider part of Russia, remember, was so bad that they didn't realize that the Ukrainians would fight back. But it does appear that it was poorly planned. What we are told, again, I don't know if there's verification on this, we were told that the army that went into Ukraine was largely an army of conscripts rather than professionals, that they were told they were going on a training exercise. If that's true, I'm sure that army's morale is very, very low as they move into a situation now where they may very well be killed. At least many thousands of them could be killed. But there is, you know, a point where in warfare, overwhelming force just overwhelms everything else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
You can make one mistake after another, and still, if you have the numbers, it usually works out badly for the other side. There were mistakes made by the United States in World War II. There was some inadequate equipment. There was some bad training. There were some doctrines that were obsolete. But in the end, in the war in the Pacific, we had the numbers. We had the production capacity. We had the training facilities. And in the end, despite some very, very spirited and at times ugly opposition, the capability of the opposition, we won. And nobody will know until this is studied and to know what went wrong, if in fact anything did go wrong. Maybe their intelligence was correct and they just didn't read it correctly.
Yeah, well, I think that's the problem, that we don't know completely. But I'll say one last thing before we take a break, Bill, that one of the problems, I think, with the Russian army is that this is an army that has not been, hasn't really had any battle experience for almost 40 years. I mean, they were in Afghanistan 40 years ago. So none of the officers in this army has the experience, let's say, that the American army had in Iraq, where you had a Vietnam generation that was now the officers. Having officers who've actually been in battle means
yes.
a heck of a lot to the soldiers who are carrying out the battle. And I think that's the real problem here, that the Russian army maybe wasn't really ready. They do have the overwhelming force. I agree with you on that. But there could also be some real morale problems in the army. We don't know that for sure, because obviously we're not going to get that from Russia, but I guess we're picking it up from some of the interviews they're having from some of the captured Russian soldiers. We're going to take a little break. And we'll be back with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. One thing, Bill, about Ukraine, then I want to move on to President Biden. It is amazing to me the large majorities of Americans who believe that this would have never happened under President Trump. Now, it's pure speculation,
yes.
obviously. You know, we have no way of proving that. But the perception out there is that it would have never happened under Trump. again, I don't know how people reach those conclusions, but I think it's all based on how poorly they feel about the Biden administration. So it's not so much a comment about Trump as it is, I think, a comment about the current administration, Bill.
I think that's true. I think the contrast between President Trump and President Biden in this particular area, the area of what might be called toughness or giving an impression of toughness or being fearsome, I think that is a dramatic contrast. That doesn't mean people have to love President Trump. He's not always a lovable guy. But I do think that when they say this would never have happened under Trump, they're saying is Trump was alert to danger, that he believed in strength, and that he would have applied the strength earlier. We'll never know if it's true. We'll never know if it's true. There's also the feeling that Trump was unpredictable, that Trump was wily, that you didn't know what really he was going to do next. And there is a thesis in wartime called the rationality of irrationality, which holds that the more irrational you seem to your enemy, the stronger you seem to your enemy, because they're afraid of your irrationality. When you go to combat training in the Army, at least in my day, and I fought in the Civil War, but a long time ago, when I went through basic training and you went through bayonet training, I don't even know if they do bayonet training anymore, but what you're taught when you approach the enemy to scream and yell and to act irrational. And the reason was, when people see crazy people running at them, they get more scared. I recall during the Vietnam War, Herman Kahn, for whom I worked at the Hudson Institute, actually recommended, well, with tongue in cheek, that we drop ping pong balls on Hanoi. And I remember asking him, Herman, why would you drop ping pong balls on Hanoi? He said, it's completely irrational and crazy. And the North Vietnamese might say, these people are nuts. Do we really want to fight crazy people? And that is actually a reaction. You know, it's like the one who in an office situation who is most feared is the one who screams and yells and bangs on tables. He may be a complete nutbag. He may be wrong on anything, but he will be feared just for that and for the wild things he says. So there's a logic to it. There's a logic to it. No idea whether that's how they saw Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is that there are similar attitudes about Afghanistan. I mean, you asked, some of the polling data shows that what happened in Afghanistan would not have happened under President Trump. So there is a sense out there that however unlikable he may have been, at least to our enemies, he was respected, if I'm using the right word. May have been very unlikable. You didn't like his tweets and you didn't always like his personality, but you certainly didn't want to get into a fight with him. That's kind of the way I concluded, Bill.
Yes, yes, and that's exactly true. I'm reminded of the advice that Admiral Yamamoto, the Japanese admiral who planned the attack on Pearl Harbor, is reported to have given to his superiors. According to the story, he was doubtful about the attack, and he said to them, I have lived in the United States. I was stationed in the United States, which was true. He played on softball teams with the same admirals he fought later in World War II. And he said, I know how the Americans are going to react, and they're not going to react the way the government of Japan thinks they will. Japan's government believed that once the attack was over, the United States would make a deal, that they wouldn't want to fight a war. They would make some kind of a deal, and Japan would have won most of the Pacific. But he said, no, they're going to fight back. And he, of course, was right.
Mm-hmm. Another interesting thing, Bill, too, is the way the Europeans are reacting. I mean, I'm kind of happy to see the Europeans take this whole thing seriously. And in some cases, even take their own sanctions. And in some cases, even provide military assistance. So, you know, that is, if anything, that is the consequence of this, that NATO, maybe NATO not necessarily has been strengthened, but maybe a lot of Europeans are beginning to realize, you know what, we cannot just rely on the United States to defend us. We're going to have to defend ourselves, and that means investing more money in defense. I follow some pundits up in Canada, and they're saying the same thing. They're saying that Canada has to – you know, upgrade its army. It has to take its army more seriously. So maybe there is, that's kind of an unintended consequence of all of this, Bill.
Well, you know, it's interesting when you observe the nations around the world and how they've reacted. In the first few days, as you know, NATO was pretty wobbly. I mean, they didn't want to get too involved in this. They made the usual statements of denunciation, which come off a card that's prepared for every crisis. We denounce. Now, what is Washington going to do? But here they did begin to step up, especially Germany, which has been arrogantly independent for too long, basically making its own foreign policy, while an important member of NATO never paying its full bills, never paying the full 2% of GNP that they were supposed to pay under the NATO agreement for national defense, and playing nice, happy games with Russia. They get a good part of their energy, it might even be the majority of their energy, from Russia. And I think they saw immediately that the advice that they had been given over the years, that they were becoming too dependent on Russia, was true. And I'm glad they learned. And they have now committed to paying their full share of the NATO dues, in a way, and to supply material to the Ukrainians, and also to recognize the need for alternative forms of energy. They may learn that lesson before we do. We must remember that one of the flaws in Mr. Biden's performance, and it is giant, is the fact that when he took office, this country was energy independent. We did not have to buy oil from or natural gas. But through his radical environmental policies, which were dictated by the left wing of the Democratic Party, we lost that tremendous advantage. And I think that to some degree, this is a theory. I don't have absolute proof, but it seems logical that the Russians looked at that when they decided to launch this action, knowing that so many Western countries were dependent on them for energy and that the United States couldn't supply that energy any longer. And from
what
we understand, the administration has no intention of making any change, which is reckless and irresponsible. And I hope the Republicans make an issue of it during the campaign.
Yeah, well, I think there already are. I mean, if you hear, like, again, back to Senator Cotton, Senator McConnell, Senator Ted Cruz, Senator Marco Rubio, just to name four, I think they're all making that case. Well, let's talk a little bit about the speech tonight, and I want to begin by talking about Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who is apparently saying that Americans, and I'm looking at a story here, and I'm paraphrasing the speaker, saying Americans don't know what he's done. I think, you know, basically saying that Americans, I guess, you know, they cannot see the high gasoline prices or how it benefits them, I guess. And
yes.
if this is the message that the Democrats are going to have, that somehow everything is great, we just don't know how to explain it to you. If that's the message, Bill, they're in bigger trouble than I thought they were.
That appears to be the message, because even before this war broke out, they were saying that Americans just don't understand how wonderful a president we have and all the successes he's had. Well, Americans have to feel that in their lives. You're serving people. You're not just serving an ideology. And they don't see it. They don't see it in our international situation. They don't see it in our defense situation. They certainly don't see it in the crime situation in our cities, and they don't see it in the economy. Yes, it is true, some incomes went up, but that raise has been eaten up by inflation. So people don't see it in economic gain at all. And I think that they're also angry over the fact that the president does not seem particularly sharp in his views or statements, that the vice president has recently been found on a milk carton. I mean, I don't know what it is she does. And you would think in the middle of a conflict, he sent her to Europe to one of the meetings of our allies, and she apparently didn't register much and then came back and made a fool of herself, even in her prepared statement. She doesn't know the language of diplomacy or the language of foreign policy. And clearly, I think there is a sense of unease that this is a woman who could not take over the presidency, and she may have to, because the president does seem physically frail, and that's not said with any happiness. I wish him well. But I think the whole aura of the administration is disappointing. The Americans do like strong leadership, and they like wise leadership, and they like to know there are a lot of good people around, and they're not getting that feeling from this administration.
That's right, and there was even a comment. The vice president was at a meeting yesterday, or some kind of an event, and she said that she went off script and off script, and said people usually get what they vote for, and they got what they voted for. I mean, that's got to be
yes.
I can guarantee you that's going to be the most popular GOP ad of 2022, Bill.
Yes, that and the remarkable quote, which now I think should be chiseled into stone, of the Democratic candidate for governor in Virginia who said he didn't think parents should come into schools and tell the schools what to teach. You know, when you go to war against American mothers, it's not a good idea. I think they're finding out.
Yeah.
There are a heck of a lot more mothers than there are people who write books about education.
That's right. And the one thing we've learned anything is that mothers are getting involved, and I mean, I actually think that's a positive thing for parents
yes.
to get involved, and they're getting involved in huge numbers, to say the least. But if I was giving President Biden advice, like if he would call me on the phone and say, "Hey, tell me two things I should say tonight," the first thing he should do is fire the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mr. Mayorkas, and put somebody in there who's going to take the border seriously. And the second thing he should do is to cancel all those executive orders holding back production. And basically, he would say to American oil producers, "I need you to produce everything you can, because we're going to use the oil as a weapon against Russia. We're not going to let Russia use it against us." Those are the two things, Bill, that I believe could turn it around for him. But I'll bet you a cup of coffee he doesn't say those two things, Bill.
I don't think he will. I think he is beholden to the left wing of his party. Look, the left wing is really all he's got. I mean, if you look at the political news and look at the internals, as they say, of polls, you find that the base of the Democratic Party is shrinking. We know that there is an out migration from the Democratic Party of Hispanic voters, especially young voters. We know that Asian Americans are disillusioned. I was always surprised they were in the Democratic Party in the first place. And other groups are basically saying that, you know, you've really done nothing for us. And they can't afford these losses because there's nobody to make them up. There's nobody out there who says, "I really must be a member of the Democratic Party. I must go help Joe Biden. I mean, he is saving the country, and these ungrateful fools don't realize it." I don't hear that. And he has also lost some of the, if not the support, some of the enthusiasm of the press. And there doesn't seem to be this love for him that there was for his boss, Obama. And they also feel that things are not going well. Now, a lot is going to depend on how the Republican Party conducts itself. This is an opportunity of a lifetime. The coming midterms, no party has been in better position to make gains than the Republican Party this year. But they have to fight for every vote, and they have to fight as if they were 20 points behind, not 10 points ahead. And they have to clear themselves of kookiness and strange people, and fight for the middle class, fight for the American middle, the center-right to center-left people. They have to make it very plain that they will value the American parent and value the American parent's participation in education. And they have to come up with ideas the way Newt Gingrich did with his Contract for America, which was published in about 1994, I think it was, in time for the 1994 elections. And it said, "This is what we are going to do." And people like
right.
that. They like being told exactly where you stand and what your plan is. And they
right.
won the Congress rather handily in that year. And also, they have got to go to their bench. They have got to pretend that Donald Trump does not exist I am not at all certain that the party will be as enthusiastic about his candidacy as time goes on as some are today. I'm one of those people who say, look, he may be the most obnoxious man in the world, and he may be. I mean, but he did a heck of a job in many areas. He left this country in good shape. He left it energy independent. He left it strong, and that's all been eroded. If he is the nominee of the party, I will, of course, vote for him, but I think the party might have stronger potential nominees who don't carry his baggage.
Right. Well, and who may be basically saying, we're going to continue President Trump's policies, which
yes.
I agree with you. I mean, I think that to me, he was never given the credit for the good things that he did.
No, never.
Whether it was the economy or the oil production, which I think was critical, because I think one of the things that President Trump understood, and obviously the many Democrats do not understand, is how important the price of gasoline is in the family budget. We're paying $3.45 for gasoline in Texas right now, Bill. $3.45.
Yes.
That is the highest that I've ever paid for gasoline. I got $2.90, $2.95, $3, but it's up to $3.45 right now. When you take a family budget and in 15 months you take gasoline from $2 to $3.45, and I'm talking about Texas. I know it's different in other states. But when you have that kind of a jump in the family budget, that is killing the family budget. It doesn't matter who you voted for in 2020, you're being killed by prices like that. And
yes,
then,
of course,
the consequences, if you increase the price of gasoline, tomato goes up, potato goes up, everything goes up. And that's what I think is really hurting him, that somehow they don't seem to have any solutions. And then when they're asking the press secretary, who apparently is the unofficial Secretary of State because she's always talking about Ukraine, when they ask the press secretary, she goes, well, no, President Biden's policies are to promote climate change and green energy. Well, okay, how is that helping the family to put gasoline in the car? It doesn't, Bill. And so these people are disconnected from the reality of the family. That's kind of a long-winded way of explaining why people are so
exactly
unhappy
right.
with the president.
That's exactly right. They feel the failure in their family budget and in their feelings about what is going on in the country. This is an administration with the policies of Barack Obama and the insensitivity of John Kerry.
That's right. And obviously, you're right. And they're not as lucky as Barack Obama was with the press coverage. I agree with you. I think a lot of the press is starting to turn on him, and partly because he doesn't pay attention to them. You know, he doesn't take their questions. He doesn't talk to them. But to me, something I wanted to put on the table, Bill, is if you really want to understand how out of touch with reality the Democrats are, they just had a vote in the Senate for they have a fancy name for it, but the bottom line is abortion after 20 weeks. Well, if
yes.
you're going to have a vote on abortion after 20 weeks, why would you have that in an election year? They have got to
yes.
know that most of the country is opposed to abortion after 20 weeks. I mean, there may
yes.
be a debate, you know, an abortion in the first 12 weeks or whatever. You know, people can debate that. But almost 80% of the people don't want abortion after 20 weeks. So why would they even hang on to that issue, Bill? Politically, it's killing them. Let me just say one quick thing about abortion. There was a story the other day here in Texas of how even Democrats are not talking about abortion anymore in Texas because they don't want to upset Hispanics. And the one Democrat who voted against this abortion bill was Henry Cuellar. And you know who he
yes.
is. He represents
yes.
The Democrats in the South, here in South Texas. So why would they go out and have an issue like this? Who they may be pandering to the left, I agree with you, but there's less people in the left than they are in the rest of the country, Bill.
And they don't realize that. This is what happens when a party becomes controlled by ideologues who only see the ideology, who never see the people, who never talk to people, who never get the feelings of what the population believes, but they sit there and their entire world is between their ears. And a perfect example of that is AOC, who endorsed a statement that was made this week by the Democratic Socialists of America, contradiction in terms, which is now calling for the abolition of NATO. What great timing. I mean, wow. These people really are astute.
Right. Yeah, they certainly have good timing. We got to give them
yes.
that. Yeah, abolition
yes.
of NATO when you've got Russian troops in Ukraine. Yeah, that's a great time to talk about eliminating NATO. Well, Bill, one more story today that probably won't get a lot of airtime because there's going to be very little suspense, and that's the Texas primary. But what I'm looking for is to see the turnout, and specifically the turnout in South Texas. What I'm hearing is that the Republican turnout is very strong in South Texas, and this is, of course, based
yes.
on early voting. And, for example, in Harris County, Houston, which has become sort of a Democrat stronghold, Republican turnout has been very heavy. So, you know, that is, so the news, you know, Abbott is going to be renominated and Beto is going to be nominated and all of that. But it's all these little numbers inside the numbers, Bill, that sort of go back to what you were saying before, that the Democrat Party is, you know, losing its support. And the people who have traditionally supported the party are going in a different direction, Bill, Hispanics, to name an example.
Well, I think that's true, and I think that, you know, judging by what I have read, and you're much closer to the Hispanic community politically than I am, but I think it's possible that in the next presidential election that the Hispanic vote may actually favor the Republicans or be even, which means neutralizing the Democratic advantage. The changes are quite dramatic in that community. I think we will also see surprises elsewhere. The Democrats are doing nothing to counter that, as you point out.
Mm-hmm.
They are just going along with policies that ideologically make them happy and make them sleep well at night.
Right. No, I agree. They're clearly they're listening too much to the extreme left wing, and in the process, they're separating themselves from the rest of the country. There was an excellent article about the Hispanics and Democrats in South Texas. It was over at the New York Times, of all places. And I'm trying to get my hands on the article. I didn't read it, but I understand it was very good. And it was really explaining why Hispanics are walking away. And a lot of it has to do with many Hispanics, like my parents' generation, or even myself. You know, we hear the Democrat Party sounding like a socialist party, and we say, wait a minute, that didn't work where I came from. So why am I going to vote for that here? Or as my mother used to say, we've seen that movie before. And I think a lot of that is amazing. The San Francisco side of the Democrat Party, Bill, is what's killing them with Hispanics and middle-of-the-road
yes.
people, Bill. So go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was saying it's even killing them in San Francisco.
That's right. That's right.
Look at the recent school board elections. I mean,
yes, right. Yeah, when that happens in San Francisco, you better retire.
Yes,
and 31 have already.
Yes, and that's correct. And the San Francisco school board, the three members who were ejected by the public, statistically, they were defeated by liberals, not by
right-wingers.
I mean, even traditional liberals are saying enough already. You've gone too far. And I think that they are also very, very uneasy with the idea of identity politics. I think
mm-hmm.
that the American creed has always been the one that Dr. King set out, you know, by the content of your character. But in
right.
this administration, they openly make it very clear that this position, like Supreme Court justice, has to go to a woman of color, or that one to a person of another culture. They don't like that. They at least like to believe that people were selected on the basis of their ability and that
mm-hmm.
everybody had an equal chance. And you see an administration absolutely committed to the idea of race, gender, and ethnicity, and those are ideas that are becoming rapidly obsolete among most Americans.
That's exactly right. Well, Bill, as always, we'll watch for your comments of the State of the Union. We'll read that tomorrow. And I wonder how many people are going to watch, Bill. What's your gut feeling? A lot of people or not enough people? What do you think?
It might be more than usual because of the war situation.
Well, that's true.
Ordinarily, I would say the ratings would rank with the Olympics, but right. It may be more because of the shooting war going on.
Yes. Well, have a great day, Bill. We look forward to chatting with you the next time. And keep up the
Looking
great work at Urgent
it,
Agenda.
Thank you.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Absolutely.
Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, check out his comments on the State of the Union. I'm sure he'll have some tomorrow morning as he watches the State of the Union with the rest of us. But I'll just say it one more time. I've never seen a president in a weaker position than President Biden as he faces the nation tonight. Have a great day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.